We need to talk about movies. It is Sweet Spot Cinema. We do this in the off season just to kill a little time and have some fun. And we try to right some wrongs. We try to find movies that many of us have seen, but say there's a dude on the crew that hasn't seen Bloodsport, for instance. Might watch that. Maybe
that's my favorite movie.
Best in Show. Monty finally got around to that. And on Whip this past weekend, Justin, you guys were talking about the great Eric Idle, and that's spawned a conversation about Monty Python.
Yeah, I don't know if we were talking about him. EA read his name during birthdays and news.
Okay.
And just said that he was from Casper.
Bork.
The 90s the movie?
Friendly Ghost?
And a few P1s were like, well, he was in Monty Python. He's not known as being in Casper. And then that made me think of, well, that's something I haven't seen, anything Monty Python related.
And that's interesting because you guys are in your mid to late 30s. I know, Lando, you grew up on Monty Python like I did because we didn't have cable for a long, long time. So watching Monty Python on Saturday night on PBS.
Dude, just British television on PBS in general.
All the Britcoms, I grew up on those. I've seen quite a few that they would run on 13. And by the way, KERA Channel 13 was the first North American television station to air Monty Python back in the 70s. So the first exposure to the U.S. was right here in Dallas, which I think is a cool little note. And listen, if you've never seen their Monty Python's Flying Circus, their sketch comedy show, it is wild ass. And they're a comedy troupe of Brits who were pretty much doing jokes for themselves. And you either got it or you didn't. And on the TV show, you would have like little interstitials of like this kind of wild ass animation. And it was all done by Terry Gilliam. And
the only American.
Yes, Terry Gilliam, also the director of The Holy Grail and Life of Brian. And he went on to do other somewhat successful cult classics like Time Bandits. I think he did Jabberwocky, I want to say. And Brazil was huge in 1985. And then, of course, he went on and did some other big box office hits later, like Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And yeah, he was a creative force. He and Terry Jones, who was part of the Pythons, directed this, and it's set up the, you know, the King Arthur and the Knights of the Round Table. And I'm done talking because I've seen it, I don't know, dozens of times, as have you, Lando, but I'm curious, Monty, Mino, your thoughts on this 1975 classic.
Okay. I will preface this by saying I wasn't familiar with the Monty Pythons. Obviously knew the name, I've heard about it, but I didn't know it was a comedy troupe. I didn't know if it was just like a series of movies or sequels or whatever. And two, British humor is not my cup of tea. And this movie is extremely British. This is as British as you can get. Now, I will give you the moments that I laughed the hardest at in this movie. I thought the opening credits were very funny with the Swedish subtitles, so much so. So I watched this movie on YouTube last night, and after the first like Swedish subtitle popped up, I had to pause it to see if I had my subtitles on. I'm like, or is this just some weird thing on YouTube, some copyright thing? And the further you get, it's telling a story about a moose and
I did the same thing where
see the animals.
I thought that it was like just like a upload they got from another country, and that's
right.
What we were watching.
Yes, and then it tells this wild ass story, and this is a trend in the movie. It just keeps going.
Yeah, they like, find things that they're trying to make themselves laugh, and they'll circle back to it throughout the movie. And I personally think it's pretty genius.
So the opening sequence goes for, I mean, it's basically an end credits at the beginning of the movie. And then the second hardest time I laughed was when the movie was over. When it just ended, they're playing the song, the screen is black, and I did stick with it for the entire song. I was like, okay, this, I know they like to drag their feet in this movie and draw things out. Maybe there's going to be something else. And then that was it.
So the reason why the movie ended that way with them all getting arrested is because they ran out of
money.
They did,
yes. And Led Zeppelin funded a lot of this movie. Yeah. And then, yeah, they wanted to have a big battle, but they were out of money. And then it just ended. Now, if I can compare my watching experience, like I just don't want to crap all over this movie. But if I can give it some credit, like if I wasn't watching this movie for the show, I would have turned it off. Probably 30 minutes or so into the movie. Not gonna lie. However, Watching Napoleon Dynamite for the first time, I felt the same way watching this. I didn't like Napoleon Dynamite the first time I watched the movie. Wasn't a huge fan of this watching it for the first time, but after it ended and the more, because I said I didn't know anything about the comedy troupe, the whole story to them, anything. However, if you talk about it, I understand the humor in it. I thought there were parts that were very humorous. I thought the Trojan Rabbit was a fun bit where there was nobody in it.
Nobody's inside of it, yeah.
And they're talking about the plan, and they're like, oh, wait, we're right here. I thought that was, thought there was humor to that. I thought Lancelot getting the note and going in the castle and just killing everybody in the castle, thought that was some, I thought that was pretty funny as well. And he turns out it was a boy writing him the note, not a woman that he expected. I thought that was pretty funny. The reoccurring bits where I'll play this for you. This is the one bit I pulled. This was the holy hand grenade scene
of Antioch.
Hand grenade of Antioch. And I cut this down to about 45 seconds. This is about a 4-minute clip that I had to cut down because it just keeps going. But they're reading the rules, and then they finally deploy the grenade.
Then shalt thou count to three. No more, no less. Three shall be the number thou shalt count, and the number of the counting shall be three. Four shalt thou not count, neither count thou two, excepting that thou then proceed to three. Five is right out. Once the number three, being the third number, be reached, then lobbest thou thy holy hand grenade of Antioch towards thy foe, who, being naughty in my sight, shall snuff it.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. Amen.
Right.
One, two, five.
Three, sir.
Three.
And that's another reoccurring bit, is King Arthur keeps confusing five with three.
Yes.
Does it a couple more times.
Well, and they're killing a tiny bunny rabbit that is apparently vicious and just leaving, like, you know, a boneyard by the opening of the cave. Justin, I'm curious your take, because you were the one initially that said you hadn't seen this, and I know you have a slightly different sense of humor than Mino.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy stupid. I mean, I spent a lot of time writing a song about a guy bunting, but I think there were more funny moments for me than Mino. Like, some of the stuff that I wrote down, like, to me, the funniest thing was something you already mentioned, when, I forget all the character names, but John Cleese, when he went in there and just stabbed everybody.
Yeah, he was Lancelot in this movie.
That made me laugh pretty hard. Early on, I knew we were going to be in for extremely stupid right out the gate, when the first thing you see after the credits is King Arthur fake galloping on a horse, and there's a guy with a coconut.
Coconuts. Yeah. Which, by the way, that was something that was used in radio and television and film for a long time in sound effect rooms, and they decided, you know what? We don't have the budget for horses. Let's just have that be the thing on the screen.
So there's usually a horse on the screen, and then they add the coconut.
And every night is pretending they're riding a horse with their squire with the coconut shells.
And then right after that, you have the long, drawn-out bit where the guy's asking him, where do you find a coconut in this... I was like, okay, so this is where we're headed.
Well, they don't migrate.
Right. And then they have the whole swallows thing.
Yeah.
They had two on a string.
Pretty soon after that, you had the guy rounding up the dead. And this guy wanted him to take an old man, and he wouldn't take the old man.
I'm not dead.
He just bonked him over the head and killed him. I thought that was pretty funny.
I can't take him like this. I feel better. And they just, like, clobber.
The French dudes just launching livestock at them, I thought, was a pretty good bit.
The cow was funny.
Dude, the cow, that sends me every time.
But I think in talking with Mino a little bit before the show, we agreed on one thing, that there was something that stuck out as extremely unfunny.
Do you want to guess?
Something extremely unfunny.
The worst part of this movie that Justin and I agree on.
Lando, I know you're big into this too.
I mean, it's kind of hard to find. It's a little slow at times. I get that, but I don't
it's
know.
It's one particular thing.
Is it the three-headed knights asking for a shrubbery?
Those were bad.
Well, that's two different things. Yeah. There's a three-headed knight, and then what we're talking about, the Knights of Knee that wanted shrubbery.
Oh, okay, yeah, sorry. Right. You're right. Yeah, yeah.
That I was painfully not into.
Again, they're making jokes for them.
And that's fine.
It's up to us if we want to laugh at it.
And that's fine, but I mean, we're allowed to say I don't think that was funny.
However, you will find yourself or you will find somebody in your life at some point reference the Knights Who Say Knee. And
I've heard that before. Yes.
Yeah.
And then I saw the scene. I was like, okay, this, I don't see why this is one of the most famous parts of the movie. I thought the cow was a lot funnier.
What about the Castle of Anthrax?
That was
Spank the Virgin.
Where Sir Galahad is searching. He sees a vision of the Grail above the Castle of Anthrax, and he is just struggling to get up to it, and it's nothing but 16 and a half to 19-year-old virgins inside.
Which was a little uncomfortable. Yeah, the age is a different time, 1975.
I'm trying to think if there was any other thing that stuck out. I mean, yeah, it just the overall vibe of it, I was like, okay, this is incredibly British, like you said, and dumb. And I mean, I probably wouldn't have turned it off if I was watching it naturally just because I wanted to see how it played out. But I do think some of it was lost on me.
So, Sean, how old were you the first time you watched this movie?
This movie?
Yeah.
12, 13, okay. Somewhere in there.
And I wonder if there's something to that where if you saw this movie, because really up until the Anthrax Castle scene, it felt like a kid's movie a little bit. Now, the humor, very British. But I wonder if I saw this movie when I was, you know, 12 to 15 or a kid, if I would have thought it's funnier and then maybe I just find it more nostalgic.
I mean, they were cursing and killing witches.
Yeah, the other thing you need to take into account is nobody at the time was doing anything like
this. Yeah, this is not your formulaic American comedy you grew up with at all. This is just completely, again, now for something completely different.
But now we grew. Now we have Drewski.
Yeah.
Now we have,
you gotta stop funny with stuff. Drewski.
We certainly do.
Drewski is an American genius.
There was a couple times, too, where I felt like something they were doing was being drawn out a little bit too long.
Like I can see that.
And they brought light to it too. Like they were like, "All right, let's move it along."
Like I enjoyed
for a little bit
the guards that were not understanding the guy who wanted them to watch his son and not leave. But then I'm like, "Dude, we're a minute and a half into this and they're still doing the same joke over and over and over."
And they go to follow him out, and then the whole joke just starts all over again, and it just keeps going.
I'm glad you guys watched this, because you had never seen the sketch comedy show. I think if you had a base of that, because that was on for several seasons, that, again, Lando and I grew up watching on PBS on Saturday nights.
It's basically SNL before SNL, but the way that they end their sketches, they don't get to an ending. They just transition to something else.
Which I think that's why the ending of this movie is, in a way, sort of a nod to the sketch comedy show.
I kind of like the ending, honestly, because halfway through the movie, I'm like, okay, I want to see if they get the Holy Grail. I want to see, you know, they cross the Bridge of Death. That was a pretty clever scene, too. I'm like, all right, it feels like they're close. They get to the castle. There's the French dude again. There's going to be a big war, and then it just ends. It goes to black. The song plays, and then there's this murder like halfway through the movie that's kind of the side plot, and then the cop car just shows up. It's like, okay, this is 92 AD or something, and then here's just a modern-day cop car.
And it's probably confusing for first-timers where you have the cast that are playing the Knights of the Round Table, but they're also playing, like, other characters in the movie.
I had to look that up to make sure. I was like, I'm pretty sure isn't this King Arthur right here?
I've seen John Cleese. Like, this guy looks exactly like him, five or six times.
And that's what they would do in their TV show. They only had five or six of them, and they would play everybody, including women, which I think was pretty hilarious.
A couple of questions. One, I'm blanking. How was the French guy saying the word knights? Does anybody remember?
I don't remember. I had to watch with subtitles.
It was uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Was it?
Yeah. He said the way TC pronounces the nuggets.
He also said you smelled of elderberries. And would fart in your general direction.
So as Monty Python connoisseurs, the two of you, would you argue this is peak what they are? Because if that's the case, then
Life is pretty good. Life of Brian, too.
I think Life of Brian's a more complete movie because this was such a success, and it became a cult classic that by the time 1979, 80 rolled around, Life of Brian actually had a budget. And I think there was genius to that. I think the meaning of life, like you said, sort of blended like a weird plot line along with their sketch stuff. Again, this isn't for everybody. And I think that's kind of what I love about it, because there's people that love Monty Python and some people that just don't get it whatsoever.
And it's also one of the most popular comedies of all time, too.
It's ranked pretty high yeah. on all these all-time lists.
And maybe that's just a time thing. If I saw it, you know, if I grew up watching it, maybe I would appreciate it better. Maybe if I watch it for a second time, it'll stick with me a little more. Because like I said, there's definitely humorous parts to me, but I didn't find myself like laughing out loud that much in it. I was just like, the cow, okay.
Yeah.
A chuckle, that's funny.
Yeah, but that's more just like straightforward
right.
slapstick. I think every time you see a coconut now, you're going to wonder,
yeah.
did it migrate here
right.
due to an African swallow or a a European swallow?
And can a 5-ounce swallow carry a 1-pound coconut?
right. just
see?
Dumb
yeah,
stuff
it's
like
dumb.
Yeah, it's stupid but clever. Like the scene when he comes up to the peasants and they're just moving mud around.
Yes.
And he's like,
yeah.
you're a king. I didn't vote for you. And then there's that whole dialogue there between them. I think that's clever but really stupid.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like.
So what's our final grade for you two first-timers?
I give it a 5 out of 10. Justin?
5. I'll give it 3 stumps up, 1 stump kind of off to the side.
Thumbs okay. up.
I think the committee will take that.
Okay.
So Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Not as good as Bloodsport.